to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, special guest Akilah Hughes joins to talk about R. Kelly's Brett Kavanaugh moment. Then Naomi Ekperigin, Megan Gailey, and Tian Tran join to talk about Women's History Month and the problems with feminism. Think we're going to solve it, guys. And finally, as always, the hills will die on. A little bit of housekeeping at the top. First of all, our Nancy Pelosi shirts just got restocked this week, and we have them in sizes small to double XL, so if you are hankering for a Nancy Pelosi shirt, you can go to crooked.com and get yours. Second on the agenda, America's soulmate Alyssa Mastromonaco has a new book called So Here's the Thing. It just came out this week. Buy it. It's great. And we love Alyssa, so good luck to Alyssa and congratulations. Finally, if you want to submit a hill you'll die on, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. That's hysteria@crooked.com. Now let's get to the show. Hey, how's it going?
It's good. It's good.
I'm so sorry about your face. This is not a sentence I normally say. I would never normally say this to you, but are you okay?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. It's just literally like, this is so dumb and vain, but I'm like, I've never thought about my chin deeply. And now I'm like, my whole face is ruined. Like, I can't leave my house until this goes down. I called like three doctors. I'm like, is it just ice? And they're like, you just have to wait. So, you know, I'm just like going through the motions of becoming like Quasimodo in my home. Like I'm drawing the curtains. Oh. I'm like blacking out the mirror.
If like a delivery comes and you open the door and you hiss when the light hits you.
That's exactly what's going to happen. It's just like, it's not even, I mean, it's a little like sore still, but it's mostly just swollen and unattractive, which, you know, cool personal brand to have.
Swollen and unattractive. You know, when I didn't get my wisdom teeth out until I was 30 because I have a really weird, I have a child's mouth. I don't know. When I got them out, it was like really hard on me because I was 30 when they took them out. And I got like, I had a ton of bruising. And I remember when I was recovering from it, being in that exact mindset, thinking like, I'm hideous. I can't leave my house. And it was like, it's like,
literally,
fine.
I can't meet anyone new.
Yeah.
I met people I've already met before that it's like, fine, okay. They're going to be like, you don't usually look this bad. But yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know.
People walk around the world with faces that have quirks to them all the time and they're just fine. And I remember thinking to myself, like, it is a total like rude awakening to be like, oh no. But then I was like, I guess if I had this for like, if it were going to be forever, I would get used to it. It would take a couple weeks, but I'd be like, I'm the girl with the purple cheeks now.
It's who I am and I'm accepted it.
Yes, exactly. It's like, it would be a moment of personal growth. Well, Akilah, thank you so much for joining. Yeah. Despite your accident on the sidewalk. It's, we can laugh at it because you're laughing at it. I normally wouldn't laugh.
Exactly.
At you.
My eyes slip. My face catch, as it were.
Do you have like an old fashioned toothache thing, you know, like in cartoons when they tie something around somebody's head underneath their chin?
I honestly should do that just so like for sympathy purposes.
I always thought it was real cute. You should do it. I think it's cute. So we've got a couple news stories that I wanted to get to today. And we were originally going to talk about something else first, but then I logged onto Twitter this morning and I was like, oh my God, R. Kelly did his first interview since he was arrested and charged with 10 counts of aggravated sexual assault. And a few of those people were underage at the time. He did his first interview, and it aired this morning. He was interviewed by Gayle King on CBS This Morning, and it was a spectacle. Akilah, did you see clips of this interview? Did you see pictures and stuff?
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning that there's a person like this who, you know, obviously has all of these horrible accusations and has for decades, right? Not have some sort of PR person tell him not to get up and scream at Gayle. Like, that's maybe the first thing you say is like, never leave your chair and never yell.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever yells first loses in an interview. In an interview, the person who yells first is the loser, for sure. But he stood up and he got in Gayle King's face, kind of, but it was almost like he wasn't even yelling at Gayle. He was yelling at the camera. It's like he was performing for the audience. And Gayle sat there very stoically and calmly and professionally as this man was just sort of like looming over her and screaming and crying and responding by saying that he was being lied on. He was saying he was being assassinated. He said he was being buried alive, as he was being given a national platform to defend himself. What did you think of Gayle's composure during this whole thing?
I think that it definitely speaks to like the way Black women have always had to perform in public situations, right? Where, you know, if she had been that emotional for any reason, and I can't imagine why she would have been, you know, I do think that people are addressing R. Kelly's performance, and that's exactly right. It was a performance for the camera. You know, they're addressing how over the top it was. But I also think that, you know, Gayle really showed the kind of stoicism that in these times, in these trying times where like it's bad news every day, it's honestly refreshing to see an interviewer ask tough questions and not end up devolving the conversation into, you know, yelling back at this person who clearly isn't ready to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in talking about these times, a lot of people were reminded of another recent performance by a man who was crying while accused of sexual assault. When I was watching his performance, I thought a lot about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings that happened back in September of last year, about how he started his testimony by said, "I'm innocent of this charge." He called the hearing a partisan frenzy bent on destroying his nomination, his family, and his good name. He called the confirmation process a national disgrace. This is a Supreme Court justice. We're talking not about R. Kelly now. We're talking about a Supreme Court justice. He also said, you know, that the National Review ran a piece calling the hearing a character assassination, as did the Weekly Standard, two conservative outlets. You know, the idea that that a man being accused of sexual assault is the same thing as being murdered is something that is really interesting here. Did you see parallels between Kavanaugh and R. Kelly? And where do you see those two narratives diverging?
I think the similarities are pretty glaring. There's the immediate victimization of the self where it's, you know, I deserve this thing. I should be revered. I've had a 30-year career. These accusations, you know, no matter how substantiated and how poorly I can refute them, are damaging to me. What I may or may not have done is besides the point. It's just so unfair that I even have to answer a question. And it's interesting because the critique of women in power and women in politics is always that women are too emotional. And, you know, I don't think that it's because they both like R&B that these two men had the same sort of performance. I think it's more of a culture of never blaming boys. And when they do get blamed for something, they absolutely cannot face any sort of consequence. How dare you? When the Surviving R. Kelly documentary was released, it trended on Twitter for days. It wasn't the sort of situation where we were sort of hearing about things but not seeing the people who are affected. And so I do think that specifically with the R. Kelly case, since we have been hearing about allegations against him for truly decades, like it can't be overstated that this is something that has been in the zeitgeist and we've just sort of collectively as a society, we knew that this was a problem. I personally don't listen to Ignition Remix anymore.
Yeah, and me
neither. But I think that, you know, the difference here is that we weren't so super unaware of the problem with R. Kelly. It's just that now that this documentary exists and we're hearing and seeing the voices and faces of the victims, that, you know, it's all very real and it's all kind of hard to ignore. Mm-hmm. Because there was just so much information about R. Kelly's, you know, alleged transgressions, I think we were, it's easier to sort of turn and not feel like we're going to get anything new. With Brett Kavanaugh, he basically just said he was innocent. And then he had a hearing where he just like yelled and screamed and cried. And it was like an absolute just travesty for democracy, the way that he conducted himself. But also I think when we talk about these times, right, it's not surprising then that someone like this gets appointed to the Supreme Court. In the case of R. Kelly, you know, the court of public opinion has already made a decision. It's not like the president can just appoint him to something.
Well, I mean, so I don't give him any ideas, because
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he seems like just Donald Trump's type, except for the fact that he's black and Donald Trump doesn't seem to like black people very much.
Exactly. Like maybe, you know, seeing R. Kelly make a absolute fool of himself on TV can be a nail in a coffin versus Brett Kavanaugh then getting promoted after acting like a buffoon.
Yeah, that's true. And like, oh, wow, is the new normal a man gets accused of sexual assault and he fights it by throwing a fit and then he wins and everything just, it goes, that's how it happens? Is this just going to be a series of male fits that happen forever and I have to sit there and worry about the feelings of somebody who stands credibly accused of sexually assaulting people? Like, why is this why is this what we are forced to look at? But I do think that one silver lining in this, the R. Kelly interview was Gayle King, like we talked about, and her composure. Mm-hmm. And so in honor of Women's History Month, I would like to make Gayle King the inaugural entry on the Hysteria Women's History Month vision board for her composure, her professionalism, and her tough questions. Women who are in situations where they're encountering emotional men can look to, because she really showcased her chops as an interviewer. And I was really impressed by her today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The stunning work from Gayle. Congratulations, Gayle, getting on the wall.
Yes. Number one entry on Hysteria's Women's History Month vision board. And I will be invoking the spirit of Gayle whenever I feel myself getting stressed out this month.
Same.
Well, Akilah, thank you so much for joining us. I hope your face gets better.
Thank you.
You don't mind if I say, I hope your face gets better into a microphone, right?
Honestly, I like it. I think that we should always cheer for my face to get better, whether it's hurt or not.
Well, thank you so much for calling in today. Let's do this again. Akilah Hughes, talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Talk to you then. Bye.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, there'll be more Hysteria. Welcome back to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week on Personal Political, I have three members of the squad with me. Can't wait to get into what we're going to get into. First, Naomi Ekperigin, actor, writer, and host of the podcast Couples Therapy. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Good to be home.
Good to be home. We have this new art in the studio, which is Hysteria-specific art, which I feel very welcomed today.
Story.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, it's great. And then we also have comedian, writer, and driver's license test passer, Megan Gailey.
I did it.
She did it.
And it was hard.
You did it.
I didn't even need all 36 questions. I passed on 34.
Okay, wow. Megan, you know, when I took my driver's test, it was disturbingly easy. When I was taking the written test, I was like, this is what they're giving people licenses for. One of the questions was, I've said this on the podcast before. One of the questions was, when you were backing up and there are kids at the end of the driveway, what do you do? And one of the
accelerate.
And
accelerate.
The answers was honk your horn so the kids know the car is moving. Like,
that's not a bad
start.
Yeah.
It's just a start, but
sure.
But then there's questions about like tractor trailers and how much they weigh and what those are tricky, I think.
How much they weigh?
Or not weigh.
Oh.
I'm exaggerating.
I was told there wouldn't be numbers on this test. And finally, welcome back to Tien Tran, actor, writer, and survivor of bangs.
Wow. Hello. It's been a part of my identity since I was a child.
Yeah.
So this is a big step for me to see my own forehead.
They're, don't get bangs. I'm just going to, not you, but anybody, just generally speaking.
Oh, I need them.
I'm doing it.
Ooh, I cover
You're
up the
doing
forehead.
It? I'm doing it the day after my wedding. I'm going to get a blunt bang.
Ooh.
I don't want to be on my deathbed and say I never got a bang.
Okay. But right. It's an 18-month commitment.
I once had a bad bang haircut, and my sister told me later on that everything I said sounded dumb.
Oh.
So just be careful for that.
Well, yeah. Now I'll have an excuse.
Well, let's get into the bigger topic this week. Well, March is Women's History Month. Congratulations, guys.
Congratulations.
It's our time. This is the month to have a dream.
Yes, we're going to do it. We actually just started the Hysteria Women's History Month vision board today. So if there's a woman who inspires you and you want to pause and be like, I want to add this woman to the Hysteria Women's History Month vision board, I don't care. Let it be a free-for-all. Add whoever,
oh, my gosh.
Add whoever you want. Gayle King is number one on the Women's History Month vision board. Yes. But because it's Women's History Month, I've been thinking a lot about the whole idea of like women as a united front, which is something that doesn't really make sense anyway. But then I've been thinking about women I tend to agree with as united front, which doesn't actually exist either. And by that, I mean feminism. I think most people listening to this podcast are feminists, call themselves feminists, or agree with feminists on a lot of things. Or you're listening to this because we make you very, very angry. And if that's the case, congratulations for making it this far without having your heart explode in your chest. But feminism is something that seems to be a word that means whatever anybody wants it to mean. So it kind of means nothing. And a lot of criticism of feminism recently has been that it is exclusive, or that it leaves people out, or that it elevates some at the expense of others. And so I want to get into it. I think we can solve it today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Guys, 32 minutes 30? On the clock. Solve feminism.
It's like this is like the best escape room. We can't leave until we solve it.
It's Iron Chef, and the ingredient is women. I mean, Naomi, the first time you and I talked, you brought this up as something that it kind of is on your mind a lot, like the divisions within feminism. Race, sexual identity, sexuality, gender expression are all things that have alienated people mm-hmm. within the feminist movement. And how have you seen that happening, Naomi?
Well, I guess I feel like when we first talked, what I was very interested in, because it's like, oh my God, if I get a white woman alone, I'm getting answers. Okay. Picking your brain. It feels to me like the branding of feminism, the commodification of feminism is so centered on cis white women. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me when I felt like my knowledge, like all the academic language around feminism was like, that didn't come till much later in life. Like, I'm a black woman who grew up with a single mom who worked and raised me. So I was like, yeah, women can do stuff. And also they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't feel like it was like, I am putting on the mantle of womanhood to feed my child. It was like, this is what has to be done, because that's what I always saw. And that mm-hmm. was my idea. Like, that's baseline, mm-hmm. you know, and it wasn't until like later in life where it was like, you know, that like, I didn't even get that some women didn't have to think that, you mm-hmm. know, or like didn't think that it was like, it was a no brainer. And then to feel like it's like, not only is it not a no brainer, it is very divisive. Some people are not having it.
Mm-hmm.
But it always seems like whenever it is presented in a way that people like, it is like a white woman who's mm-hmm. like, I am standing strong. And it is. And that's the part that can be very, that's very frustrating to me. Cause then that kind of determines whose issues we care about.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, like who gets credit for what advancements, and who gets to actually experience them, and who is celebrated for things that that other women don't get to pick, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think another way that manifests is women who choose to stay home with their kids mm-hmm. because their husbands make enough money that they can choose to stay
right.
home.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's white people who have the money that one can be like, I'm going to opt to take care of, and you know, good for you if that's your choice. But I think that that's also like that's kind of a false celebration. And I also think one thing you brought up was really interesting, Naomi.
Thank God.
Was about
just God. One.
Okay, only one
thing.
Though.
No, that was a treasure trove of interesting points. It reminded me of something Tian and I have talked about marketing and the image that people are presented of what feminism looks like. And Tian, you mentioned that you think that marketing kind of it kind of makes feminism into something that's like soft and fun and happy.
Yeah, I think it gives like a false sense of achievement and that like things are moving forward in a way that we can all get behind. Now, don't get me wrong. When I saw that Nike Women's History commercial, I cried.
Yeah,
I straight up cried. And I was like, this is beautiful. I love sports and we can win gold medals. And but like, you know, something as like a Nike, a company that puts out these like positive, progressive messages, as a company as a whole, we all know is awful and has like terrible practices and exploits people. So like that's where I think the like hypocrisy of commodifying and advertising feminism is like it's just a feel good. It just feels like a feel good pat on your back mm-hmm. kind of exercise for these companies. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. I think it's like representation is very important, and I think marketing and advertising shapes so much of like how we see the world. And so I think it is on some level important to have those images out, but I just wish they were doing more than just like a surface band-aid
for Women's History Month,
you know?
Right. Well, remember when Dove made us all never hate our bodies again?
Literally the only soap I use.
It is the only soap
Dove
I use, too.
I'm a body wash bitch.
I mean, if it works, it works. But do you remember when those ads came out and they're like, everyone is beautiful. Everyone is, you know, whatever. And it's the same company that makes Axe body spray.
Well, right. But then also, don't you think, too, especially now, like those ads could not start now.
No.
Because then people would be like, you are excluding as different types of bodies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's so many, like that was of a time or even now, you know, when that came out, what, 10 years ago, however, we're like, I am empowered. She is thick like me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I feel like we would be in a time where like that's still not representing all women.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that brings up a really interesting point. I've been seeing on Twitter, and there was a piece in the New York Times a couple weeks ago about feminism in the UK and how it's sort of riddled with like trans exclusion and how that is like a huge divisive issue over there, which to me felt very alien because here that's not really something that's acceptable within mainstream, like women's lib, if you will, if to use a phrase from the 1970s. But anyway, I think that like, you know, there's different parts of the world have different kind of battle lines drawn. And it was interesting to read about how fucked up it seems over there. And then I was like, oh, wait, it's also fucked up over here.
Yeah. Like with the Women's March, the whole, I think, focusing so much on like anatomy and the pussy hats mm-hmm. in and of itself is already exclusionary because, you know, a lot of femme identified bodies don't have like, you know, aren't have vagina havers.
And a pussy hat.
And those are pussy hats, you know? So like, I think what you're seeing in England is like, it's happening here.
It's here too.
It's here too. It's here and it's bad.
As I went through our outline for today, I was like, gosh, I didn't even know about a lot of these, like, I guess, quote unquote, infighting that's happening under the giant umbrella that is feminism. But I think that's because of your point of like, I am who feminism is, like a I'm the poster child now. It's like an acceptable white gal who curls her hair and puts on a lip and and tells my dad when he's wrong, even though he paid for my college, you know? Like I am the poster child, and so I don't have to know because I'm like, well, I have my pussy hat and all of my gal pals are coming over to watch the premiere of New York tonight, and that's what we're doing. But it's like, oh, we are the ones that have to really educate ourselves so we can start to hopefully build a bridge. I mean, because we get away with the most bullshit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the Women's March, I think, was a really good example of kind of how things are sort of coming apart at the seams. Like, it started, I believe it was a Jewish woman who started it, and then she enlisted the help of a few other women who sort of eventually wrested control of it from her. And then one of those women said some things about somebody who says real bad things,
right?
And nobody would disavow anybody. It becomes this weird, like World War One Franz Ferdinand type, like complicated allegiances. It's like, wait, now who's at war with who?
Yeah.
What's going on? And like, I think on a one thing that I've kind of taken from this is that on a even though we presented this like unified front where it's like, okay, we all agree, fuck this guy, fuck the president, you know, fuck this guy. We can all agree on that. But beyond that, I think that there are simmering problems, misunderstanding, there's hurt feelings, there's ignorance, there's all these things that maybe hadn't really been brought to the surface before. I was just wondering, Tien, I just was wondering if, like, you know, as a member of the LGBT community, is there a specific way that you feel like feminism has excluded you, or is there a specific encounter that you have over and over again with cis white women that makes you feel crazy?
Okay, where do I start? No, just, the biggest thing that bothers me is how heteronormative everything is and how heteronormative, like, conversations start to become, where it's like I'll be sitting with a group of women and it'll be like, it'll devolve into like, men are like this, when like men, women are like this, men are like this. And I feel like it forgets like a group of people that are queer. Not that you need to be, you know, always talking about that. But like, for me, the biggest thing when it comes to straight women is one of the questions I get asked a lot. It used to a lot more is like, which one of you is the man?
Uh-huh. Ugh.
That was a question I used to get often. The other thing that bothers me is a question like, it must be so much easier. Mm-hmm. God, it should be so much easier to be a lesbian. And it's not. It's mm-hmm. like people are complicated. Being in a relationship is hard.
All people are trash.
All people, yeah. We're all trash. We're all trash. So like, it's all hard.
Exactly. It's all hard. Well, I have a question though. Are you like, do you find that when you are interacting with people who don't know you, do they just assume that you are straight?
Yes, that's another thing that happens too. Because I don't necessarily present as like what your idea of a lesbian looks like, because my hair is long. but yeah, I will get that a lot as well.
But isn't that's something that's very interesting to me, in that, because I also notice it myself where I'm like, oh, I don't think about anyone's sexuality because I'm like repressed and would like to think we're all like Ken dolls down there. but it is interesting how you can just meet somebody and just like assume, where you're like, I just assume you like the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. Even in 2019, where yeah. we now like know that there's like a spectrum and there are like, you know, the range of letters yeah. and stuff, and yet we'll still assume that. That's really, I don't know. I was like, how does that still happen? I should be better. You know, like that idea. Mm-hmm.
I think I was talking to you two about it. One of my biggest pet peeves is when grown-ups couple mm-hmm. young children.
Oh, grotesque.
But it's always like opposite sex children. Open it up, you know? Open it up to all kids, like two little girls. Just be like, oh my God, what a cute lesbian couple. Just let them live.
I had such a hard time when I first moved to New York, because every man I met, I was like, well, he's gay. Every single man I met, I thought was gay. And then I was like, oh, I came from the Midwest, where if you like showed empathy in any way, you were gay. And now I'm just living in a different like culture.
Yeah.
That men feel perhaps, and sometimes not, more in touch with like sensitivity and stuff, mm-hmm. and like they dress differently, and like just because someone like presents a certain way and isn't trying to fuck me doesn't mean they're gay.
Yeah.
Right. I went through that journey when I went to New York yeah. too. I was like, wow, this is a very
where are all the straight?
Yeah, exactly.
they're right behind you.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. They're tweeting about Beyonce just like you. Naomi, same question that I asked Tien, like, what's an encounter that you've had over and over again that you're like, this drives me nuts and this is the problem?
Well, one of the things I have to like deal with, or I have to learn to, I had to very early on learn how other people saw me. I think that idea is like, mm-hmm. I think that is like also distinctly to me like other situation. Like when you have to think about how people see you as opposed to just what you think of yourself. And for me, like, people assume I am always angry mm. when I can tell you 8 times out of 10 I'm tired. There's this implication that, like, you know, like, as a black woman, especially, like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not a small woman either. So there's no, like, wallflower delicate to mm-hmm. me. Like, that's not how I present. I will be auditioning to be your Stern teacher every day this week. But that feeling of, like, constantly recognizing that, like, any negative emotion I have, I have to either deny it or put some spin on it. I think it's definitely one of the reasons why I got into comedy. It was like mm-hmm. the only way I could say stuff and have people listen without anyone getting angry. But like, and just it can just be so tough to, you know, the extent to which I had to be like, hi, so I have a question. Hi, you know, you're really coming in hot, like upper register statements as a question. You don't want anyone to get too upset because it's so often for me, it'll be like, relax. You don't need to worry about it. And like, I don't know about y'all, but nothing makes me angrier than being told to relax. Mm-hmm. Like, it always just like ratchets it up. Like, if I wasn't mad before, I am mad now. Mm-hmm. But it's like a thing where, and I realize like a lot of that is, you know, the trope of the angry black woman, like the all of that kind of stuff feeds into like someone sees me, and if my eyes look a little to the left, I've now escalated a situation that, you know, wasn't supposed to be anything in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, even yesterday I was ordering food, and it was like there were two young white guys in front of me. I'm standing back and kind of like made a little bit because, you know, the restaurant was like busy, so I've moved back to make a path for the servers to do their thing, and this other young white guy comes and just gets in front of me. So I go, oh, I was like, hey, I'm behind him. And he's like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, well, that was that situation. Like, real, real fucking minor. Like, and it wasn't even like I was mad as much as I've made a path and perhaps he doesn't realize that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to let him know. Mm-hmm. But I was already bothering him.
Yeah, he was prepared. He was prepared for you to be angry. Like, he had already read anger into a situation where there wasn't anger. You were just pointing something out.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you a lot?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
That's why I just take so much time explaining it. It's all the time, every day.
Do you feel like people are almost like confused or like, huh, that's a new take on an old classic that you that you are with a white man?
I think it's more that, like, you know, having taken my white lover 9 years ago, people still don't think we're a couple.
Yeah.
So many times, you know, that we are out and together, and that assumption, or there'll be times where I'll have him go interact with somebody in like a service or even like on the phone where I'm like, will you do this? Because mm-hmm. like, I know they'll listen to you. Mm-hmm. And he's not even an imposing figure.
He's not an imposing figure at all.
And yet, simply that, like, you know, the caucasity of hope, you know, and what that can afford even now, it's still crazy.
Yeah, that, I mean, that I was also thinking as you were talking about the different ways, you know, people treat you differently depending on how they expect you to be. Mm-hmm. But there's also sort of people that just don't even, there's a class of people that I think the mainstream just ignores, just pretends doesn't exist. So there's people that are visible, like you're visible in line and they're like, she's mad at me. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are right in front of our faces all the time, every day, women, mostly women of color, mostly poor mm-hmm. women of color, who just become invisible, mm-hmm. who nobody thinks about. And I think that that's something that we saw with like the R. Kelly case, for example, which we talked about in News Today. The women that he was victimizing were young mm-hmm. black women mm-hmm. who nobody really gave a shit about until this Surviving R. Kelly documentary came out. There is also a huge prostitution bust in Florida mm-hmm. where Asian women and women from Eastern Europe, but mostly women from China and Thailand, were being trafficked into massage parlors and forced mm-hmm. to perform sexual servitude for mostly wealthy men, like the owner of the New England Patriots. You know, and there's 300 men, I believe, who've been arrested already. And in this New York Times article about this prostitution sting, they were talking to some lawyers who were like, yeah, all these men are calling me and they're panicked. Like, again, they're so concerned about themselves, not about the fact that they were utilizing the services of sex slaves.
Right.
They were more concerned about their feelings. And I think a lot about the way that feminism writ large has abandoned invisible women. And I just was wondering, you know, what your experiences have been like. Is there any way to responsibly consume or go about society? And like, I mean, seriously, like women who are undocumented, who are working as domestic workers, who are being paid entirely in cash, have no protection. Women who are, you know, had their passports seized when they came to work in a nail salon, you know, women who work in massage parlors. Like, how has the knowledge that these people exist and that they're being exploited, has that changed your behavior at all?
I mean, there was a famous New York Times article a few years ago that talked about how poorly women who worked in nail salons mm-hmm. were paid. Mm-hmm. And then it did seem, you know, I was living in New York at the time where places had to start posting, like, we pay workers this wage. And like, I made a conscious effort to try and go to the places that were like, hey, we're not paying them as like slaves, basically. Right. And it's interesting because I think women have the ability to do that, to try and do that, whereas men who are getting a hand job are going to be less inclined to be like, well, I want to make sure this woman is being paid fairly for this hand
right.
job. Like, it's... I don't know how they're going to, like, fix this catastrophic problem that there is. I mean, I've been to the past two Super Bowls, and when you land in those cities, you are bombarded with, all the flight attendants, everyone working at every airport is being trained to identify sex workers and people that are there against their will. And that is like all you are seeing. You're seeing like a football here and there, and then like how to help women who are clearly being trafficked. And it's so heartbreaking. But unfortunately, the people that are utilizing those services, I don't think have any desire to like think beyond the surface that they're getting.
Well, because that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the tricky thing. It's like, well, how. I mean, when you ask, you know, how are we living differently? I mean, I would hope that I have not been paying for a woman to be abused or mistreated the twice a year that I get my nails did, because I'm like not. But at the same time, but like when you say something like a domestic worker, and again, I've never, I don't know the ins and outs. I've never had like a maid or lived in a house that had one. I don't know what that is. But I would imagine that if you can afford that person, you can afford, if that person is undocumented, right? Like, if you know and they have come to you and you know that, you can afford to help them meet a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You can afford to, you know, help them file some paperwork. If you have enough money to pay for full-time help or somebody to come in, you got the money to make an hour legal appointment for that person.
Yeah. Right.
I would hope, I would think. But again, I don't, you know the ins and outs. But it's, you know, the extent to which... American culture kind of thrives on getting as much as you can for as little as possible. Mm-hmm. I think it would be so hard for anybody to then, you know, do what would need to be done, meaning spend more, do more mm-hmm. to help the next person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Connected to that, I always find it very upsetting, the argument when it comes to like immigration and undocumented folks, that like even thoughtful, who I think are thoughtful liberal people, will say things like, well, they'll be doing the jobs that you don't want to do. And I'm like, that's not good enough. These are like people who should be treated as like well as we want to be treated here in the States. So I've always hated that argument of like, yeah, well, why are you upset? They'll do the things we hate.
Well, it's also like the thing is we hate them because no one is paying them a living wage to do them. Because there are plenty of people in this country, you know, who don't have education, who don't have access, or even just young people. Like when you were 15 and had to have like a job, you know what I mean? Like you could go do some dishes too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even at that age, you're like, oh no, that's not enough money to make to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I was a nanny in New York City in a very affluent area, and every other nanny was a woman of color. And so I would take the baby to like the playground, and they were like, so you don't work? And I was like, oh no, I'm a nanny. And they truly were like two of them were like, oh cool, you're like us. And then the rest were like, fuck you, why are you taking this, like, where is your dad? Like, what? And then they were like, are you in school? And I'm like, no. And they're like, are you an actress? And I'm like, no. Like, I'm just here. Well, listen, I'm a comedian. I made some bad choices. And it was like baffling to them. And it was almost like I was taking that shitty job from somebody.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, too, is like the idea of like who's taking care of kids. And there's like mm-hmm. a, you know, it's... People who provide childcare also often have their own children.
Yeah.
And so one thing that enables wealthy women to go out and have it all is the paid service of a woman in a lower economic mm-hmm. rung.
Yes.
And that's like, I think, Naomi, you were sort of getting at like visible, celebrated, rah-rah, you go girl feminists. A lot of times have help that are like women of color who are
that they're not paying.
I remember like being very young, like because I, you know, I started private school in Manhattan. Talk about affluent early. And I remember coming home at the age of 10 and asking my mother. I was like, I don't understand racism because if black people are so bad, why do white people let them raise their children?
Yeah.
That was something that, like, from the age of 10 just, like, popped out to me. It's like, how can we be less than you and you letting us take care of your kids?
Yeah.
It didn't work. And then and people would come back from their island trip, and I'd be like, they have braids like me now. Then why am I ugly? Mm-hmm. Like, all these different layers to which you're willing to, like, kind of take, avail yourself of people and on offer. But then at the same time, those people are somehow less than you?
Mm-hmm.
It's very confusing to
me. Well, you see a lot of, like mainstream culture take tropes from people of color and then repackage it, you know, the Elvisification of everything.
Ariana Grande-ing.
Yeah. Right. They repackage it, and there's when people of color are doing it, it's ignored or it's looked past or it's even sometimes looked at as lesser. And then when white people do it, especially like white women, it's like, yeah, yes, queen. Yeah. I did that. I said that in the whitest way possible.
And I loved it. I loved it. That's
that
the
was
only
good.
Way it should be said. That's
yes.
The only way it should be.
Yes, queen.
Yes, affirmative. Royalty.
But that's just something, I don't know. I think it's just the whole question of like, what is feminism is something that more than anything, feminism is not about everyone feeling good about themselves all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a white girl, and I have spent a lot of my life feeling pretty good about myself. Like, I can afford to be made to think most people who are in positions of privilege, whether that's economic privilege or visibility, whatever, most of them have the extra energy to think a little bit about what they're doing and how they're living their lives, I think. And when it comes to feminism, it's going to be... It feels like it needs to be an ongoing conversation where people get uncomfortable and people feel confronted sometimes. And that sucks. It sucks to feel like someone is like, you know what? I hate it when people like you say shit like you just said to me. That's uncomfortable, but that's the only way you get better. Like if you had food in your teeth, wouldn't you want someone to tell you?
That's true.
That's true.
When you like get to the mirror and you find out you have food, you're like, I can't trust that bitch. Let me walk these streets like this.
I want a friend to tell me. I don't want a stranger to tell me.
Oh, you don't? See,
oh, you do? Oh, I have. I'm thankful for strangers who tell me things that are like food is on my face.
That you're like,
I do it to people.
I don't know.
Because what if they walk, truly, if they like walked away and they were like, oh my God, I just talked to her for 15 minutes and she, like, I had spinach on my nose, you know?
Well, spinach on your nose.
You know? Worst case scenario, spinach on your nose.
Well, I think, guys, I think we solved it.
Wow. We did it.
I think we solved feminism. No, I think that this is a conversation that's, we're going to bring it up again and there's going to be issues that come up again because... This is a conversation that ever since I've been aware of feminism existing has been happening over and over again. And I think the only way we make progress is to just kind of lean in, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
lean
oh my God.
In.
Like number one feminist of all time, Sheryl Sandberg, once said, lean in. All right, we have to take a break. But when we come back, the hills we will die on. All right, we're back with The Hills We'll Die On. Let's start with the listener hill this week.
Hey, guys, I have a hill to die on. The chill girl gets too much credit. She's usually seen as this, like, relaxed, cool girl, like, guy's girl. But she's not always getting stuff done. I am not chill, and I never have been, and I never will be, to get my shit done. Society needs anxious little maniacs like me running around pressing everybody's teeth, and that's okay. So I just want to give a shout out to the non-chill girls and say it's okay that you're not chill, and society needs you, and keep on doing you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Hard agree.
Yeah, hard agree.
Hard agree. I think that chillness a lot of times is just boring. It's just being, it's like externally boring.
Yeah, too cool for like opinions or feelings.
But I think it's also a blanket for intense anxiety that person is truly feeling.
Or just like a numbness.
Yes.
Like a numbness built up over decades. Or pot.
I was going to say hot. Hot. Like what?
I don't know, but I know a lot of like sport girls who grew up playing sports and stuff, they're like cool. They're chill girls, you know? They're just like, it's like, Nothing yeah. matters.
Sometimes it's a poker face, weird. Though. I've been accused of being chill before, which is not true. It is constantly like six tornadoes going on up here. But I just hold it all in with a corset of anxiety. That's my chillness. All right. Well, let's get to the Hills Will Die On. I'll start this week. The show The Bachelor mm-hmm. is reaching its conclusion. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a former fan of The Bachelor. I used to watch every season. My friend Emily and I back in New York used to get together and watch it like it was a sporting event. And I realized before this season even started, I had to tap out because I finally came to terms with the fact that The Bachelor is never good. It's never good. The first couple episodes are interesting because they have that kind of like, you know, parade of lunacy that the producers obviously fed these poor women who are like, I'm going to, you know, go to David's Bridal and go nuts. And then I'm going to take them all to California and I'm going to pretend to fall in love with a wannabe actor. That's whatever. But after those episodes, once the last crazy one has gone home, it's just boring. It's like watching the most basic people that you went to high school with like fall in love. Have you ever been out at a restaurant and you're sitting next to two people who are just very boring looking yeah. and they're not mm-hmm. talking yep. to each yeah. other? And you wonder, what do they talk about? What do they do? That's what The Bachelor is. It just shows you yep. what yep. the most boring people in the world talk mm-hmm. about and do, which is talk about themselves and talk about their relationship. And it is not good and it's never been good. Bachelor in Paradise, however, is great.
I don't watch it because I think it's good, though. I watch it because I think it's bad.
Okay. But that's the thing.
Is it 2 hours or 3 hours?
Yeah, yeah, but you got to record and fast forward. Yeah. I don't watch any of the dates. I don't care. I watched the people fighting, and then I watched crying.
Yeah. I mean, a guy did jump over a fence
yeah.
this year, which was a highlight.
This wow. happened on Monday.
A guy jumped over a fence, and it was a big deal. But my question is it worth the 19 hours you spent it's, watching this season?
It's not. I no. will say the thing that I don't like about it now is that these people are not rich. When it first started, The Bachelor was rich. And then he was like a Firestone, which, you know, didn't end well. But they had like money. And now I'm just watching people that are poor fall in love. And I don't care about that.
Yeah, and it's also like women who yeah. are 25 who are like, I just think this is my last chance. And it's like, bitch, you've got 10 years of a lot of crazy shit happening to you if you only lean into it and embrace it. Seriously, you can have the 10 years between 25 and 35, best yeah. 10 years.
Yeah. I want them to branch off and do like a 35 and above, because those people yes. are like, I need to find love. Yeah. You know, like that's really, I want to watch that show. Yeah, and then the 25-year-olds, it's like, I don't care about you or your religious mom. I just am not, no. No,
that's my
you.
That's my least favorite straight people embarrassing themselves on TV show.
God, mine, that's a lot of TV.
Mine is 90 Day Fiancé. If I'm going to watch straight people be crazy,
I watch that
90
watch
Day
that
Fiancé.
Ooh. Gosh, I'll go next because yeah. I do have a TV recommendation.
Okay, do it.
Now, I'm going to say this and you're going to go, no. You need to hear me out because I am not going to lead you astray. American Idol is back and it is so good. Like, here's the difference. You're thinking Fox. You're thinking American Idol on Fox. American Idol on ABC, very, very different. Fox was like, she bangs, you know, trying to embarrass people. ABC is like trying to make you cry. I sobbed so intensely on Sunday night, like truly like a family member had died at the last 5 minutes of it. It's feel good. This next episode, a blind woman is singing. Oh. Lionel Richie is crying. It's really incredible. You have to watch it high. I'm not suggesting watching it not high, but like find a loved one. Also, you can fast forward. But it really is good. There are phenomenal singers on it. The stories are incredible. And I just think ABC has produced it in a way that will touch your heart in a time when you might need it.
Okay. I'll give it a shot. You're really selling it. Although I don't really like find that I need to cry any more than I already do. It's not like I'm sitting there like, God, my face feels plugged up. Like, what's going to express my tear ducts? But I'll give it a try, Megan.
Oh, it's good.
Okay. All right, Tian.
The hill that I'm going to die on is, can we stop with the bachelorette activities where we have to do a workout class together?
This is all dancing.
Please.
please. Like, why are we waking up early and doing aerial yoga? Yeah. I had to do that once and I was like, this is... I'm not strong enough. I can't do it. I'm hurting myself and giving myself like fabric burns because I'm not doing it properly. And no one's having fun. I don't know why. Why? Why are we celebrating your marriage by like getting our heart rate up?
At least make it
as
optional.
A group. At
if
least
you want to go to Soul Cycle because you're going to be drinking a lot that night, go to Soul Cycle.
Is that
by
why
yourself?
People do yeah. that?
Go by yourself.
No, just like, some people, yes. Okay. Some people are doing, yes, pole dancing classes together, which is actually like really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of upper body strength, which is like what I don't excel at. But they're doing, that's like a group thing. No.
Like,
if
don't.
It's just like, I want to work out because I'm getting married and yeah. I want my arms to look toned. You got to go and do that
but
on your own.
But don't make it part of the weekend. Like,
hell
don't
no.
print me out a matching t-shirt. I also hate that. Sorry, I have two. And don't make me work out. Sorry.
All right. I think that's a fair hill to die on. I'm going to just avoid making anybody mad by never getting married. All right, Naomi.
Los Angeles is not habitable land, okay? And I need us to stop pretending this is some beautiful, magical place. It has rained nonstop for about 3 months. Now, I'm from the East Coast. I'm not weak. I'm not saying that, like, it's like, oh, my God, rain is hard. What I'm telling you is this. Los Angeles cannot handle rain. Mm-mm. I'm going to tell you this. I can't poop in my toilet at home. That's where I'm at right now because I'm on the ground floor. And due to this constant rain and Los Angeles having a lack of drainage, okay, every street's a puddle, y'all. Everything is flooded. It is not made, okay? And as producer Caroline pointed out, Los Angeles has been around a few years, okay? So they should have gotten to the bottom of this, okay? They needed to drain some shit into the ocean. You got to do something. So I can poop in my own toilet.
So poop is in the streets?
It's not in the streets. It's just like not going all the way out. Oh, you see what I'm saying? Like it's not going all the way out.
Didn't think
and
about
it's
that.
Like, and it's, you know, and this is not every single day. But if this rain goes, you know, when if it's a hard rain for like 2 days in a row, just expect rising sea levels in my bathroom.
It's also not why we moved here. We moved here for sunshine and sushi.
It's literally LA's only selling point is the sun.
Yeah.
And so you take that sun away and you realize you got nothing.
No, we're in Detroit. Yeah.
This place truly. This place sucks when it's not sunny. My parents were in town this weekend. They came from Minneapolis and they were both like, oh, my stars, like Robinson Crusoe, like stumbling onto, oh, the sun. And it just rained. And so we made an executive decision to go to Palm Springs because they needed to, like,
see
that the sun existed. But, you know, without when the sun's not out, you're like, this place sucks. This place sucks.
But when it doesn't rain, it doesn't wash away all the bad stench.
There's stench here?
Oh, like L.A. smells. Does anyone not... Do we all think L.A. smells...
That's where you're staying.
L.A. smells bad.
No.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today. Megan Tien and Naomi, thank you for joining us. Akilah Hughes, thank you for calling in with the news. And there will be more hysteria this next week. Girls just wanna have fun, so Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want, it will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud and we're gonna shut it down. All the girls to the front with me. Girls to the front. Girls to the front.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.